Chapter 12. The Mysterious Count Fosco by Walter Hartwright. Now that Laura was my wife, I felt ready to fight for her and to force Count Fosco to help us. I asked Marion many questions about the Count so that I could build a better picture of him in my mind. She told me that, as far as she knew, he had not returned to his home country of Italy for many, many years. And he had kept asking anxiously if there were any Italians living near Blackwater Park. She believed that he left Italy for political reasons. She also mentioned that he often received strange, unexplained letters from abroad. Knowing how clever he was and the way he had acted, I was starting to think that he was a spy. This would explain why Madame Fosco had turned pale when she heard Laura call him one. And then there was Mrs. Rubel. Fosco had known her since he arrived in England. She was a cold, determined woman, and she was an accomplice in the terrible crime that had taken place. Could they be part of the same organisation? It was at this point that I thought of my dear friend Professor Pesca, who was, of course, also an Italian and had left his homeland for political reasons. I now decided that I needed to tell Pesca everything and ask his advice about Fosco. But before I did so, I wanted to see Fosco for myself. I went to his house in St. John's Wood and waited for him to appear. I carefully followed him on his morning walk, which took him past Regent's Park, into a cake shop, and then to a music seller's shop. When he came out of the music seller's shop, I saw him carefully study a poster in the window. He nodded to himself and wrote something down in his notebook. He then immediately turned and waved to the driver of a carriage that was waiting in the street.
"Take me to the opera ticket office," I heard him say.
When he had climbed into the carriage and had gone, I went to take a closer look at the poster. It was advertising tickets for the opera Lucrezia Borgia, which was taking place that same day. I felt sure that the Count had gone to buy tickets to attend. I had an idea. I decided to invite my good friend Pesca to come to the opera with me that evening. If Pesca could see the Count in the audience, he would be able to see if he recognised and knew him. I went to the ticket office to buy the tickets, leaving a note at Pesca's apartment on the way. When Pesca and I entered the theatre, most people were already in their seats. I looked carefully for the Count and saw him sitting near the front of the theatre. I guided Pesca to some seats that were near enough to see the Count. At the end of the first part of the opera, the curtains on the stage closed and people started to stand up. This was the moment I had been waiting for. "Do you know that man? The tall, fat one standing there facing us?" I asked Pesca.
"No, I've never seen him before," he replied.
"He's Italian, like you, and his name is Count Fosco. Do you know that name?"
"No, I don't know the name or the man."
At that moment, the Count turned his head and looked directly towards us. The eyes of the two Italian men met. There was a sudden change in the Count's face that showed something that I could not mistake. Pesca may not have known the Count, but the Count certainly knew Pesca, and he was frightened of him.
"Why is that man staring at me? What's wrong with him?" said Pesca. "How can he know me when I don't know him?"
Pesca turned to look at me, and the Count, seeing his chance, started to hurry towards the back of the theatre. I took Pesca by the arm and told him to come as quickly as he could. I wanted to get to the theatre door before the Count left, but there were too many people and we could not push past them. By the time we got there, the Count had gone. Pesca was confused and did not understand what was happening, but there was not time to explain. I was worried that if Fosco was so frightened by Pesca, then he might try to leave London. I might lose him. "Pesca, please can we go to your apartment now?" I asked him. "I must speak to you in private about something very important." Once we were alone in Pesca's apartment, I told him everything, exactly as I have written the story in these pages.
"But I don't see how I can help you if I don't know the man," Pesca said.
"He knows you. He is afraid of you, and he left the theatre to escape you. There must be a reason for this. Look back into your own life before you came to England. You left Italy, as you told me yourself, for political reasons. You have never given me details, and I do not ask for details now. I only ask about this man." To my surprise, these words produced a change in Pesca that was as shocking as the change I had seen in the Count. His face went pale and he looked terrified.
"You don't know what you are asking of me."
He spoke in a whisper, as though he was afraid someone could be listening. He started to walk up and down the room anxiously. Then he stopped and turned to me.
"Years ago, Walter, you saved my life. What I am about to tell you could put me in serious danger. However, I will do whatever I need to for you because I owe my life to you," he said.
I will repeat what he told me here, but I will make some small changes and avoid giving names in order to protect my good friend.
"I was, and still am, a member of a secret political society in Italy," he began. "I moved to this country because I was told to come here and wait by the master of the society. I have been here for 10 years, waiting for further orders. The society is very strict and extremely well organized. Everyone who joins the society is given a secret mark, which can never be removed."
At this point, he took off his coat and pushed up the shirt on his left arm. He raised his arm. High on the upper part of it and on the inside was a small, deeply burned mark in the skin. To protect Pesca, I will not say here what the shape of the mark was.
"A man who has this mark is a member of the society," Pesca explained. "As long as a person is useful or harmless to the society, they can enjoy their life. But if a person goes against the society in any way, then they will be killed. And that person will be killed by another member of the society. Luckily, I have not ever been ordered to kill someone, but they could order that at any time. There is one more thing. When I was still in Italy, I was chosen to be the secretary of the society. So this meant that if any member had to see the president, then I saw them also."
So Count Fosco had probably been to see the president at some point, and he would have seen Pesca at the same time. I felt sure that Count Fosco had that same mark burned on his arm. I strongly suspected that he was in trouble with the society, and that was why he was frightened when he recognised Pesca. It was now 10 o'clock, and there was no time to lose. Count Fosco could leave London, perhaps even England, in just a few hours, and a clever man like him, in danger and afraid, would do anything to save himself. I had to think and act cleverly and quickly. I thanked Pesca for sharing this important information with me and arranged to see him at his apartment the next morning for breakfast.